My Screaming Stigmata. Written by Janet Renshaw. Narrated by Craig Brown.
I'm one of those people who has to shut everything down at night before I, in turn, can duly shut down. It's only right and proper. Not to mention safe. The lights have to be switched off. The curtains have to be drawn. The doors have to be shut. Firmly. All electrical items must be unplugged. The computers must be turned off and my mobile phone deactivated. So when I awoke to find the sliding partition that leads from my cramped hall into my bedroom ajar, the hall light on, the TV flickering, and my laptop humming, well, then I knew. I just knew. A horror had happened. As this truth caught hold of my lungs and squeezed them in its stranglehold until the air in them condensed and sweated through my scalp, then dripped menacingly down my temples, I heard a tap on my window, just a fingernail on the glass, and through my voile, I glimpsed a shadow of a slender arm, and at its end a hand, beckoning me. Of course I followed. What else was I to do? She, for I'm almost certain the figure was she-like, led me far away, further than I had ever dreamed I could go in one black night. She took me to a place that only we, the chosen ones, imagine exist, and then the terrifying ruminations became a reality. So here we are today, in my reality, the land of shadows. A number of us arrived that same night. We were offered a safe haven for the remainder of the darkness. Then, in the morning, we were introduced and set adrift. Left to our own devices, I fear for our future in this hell on earth. It was only once we compared our shadows, thoughts, for this is how we communicate now our minds have surpassed the spoken, written, and typed word, that I discovered that the day of reckoning had been and gone. Those who witnessed it swore it was nothing like the seers had prophesied and everything they hadn't. Terrifyingly, we, the chosen ones, have survived it, though our so-called lives have been transformed. Some of us, the lucky ones, live a shadowed existence beneath the surface. We are the limboists, crawling through the soil, caked and camouflaged by the dirt. Others dwell above the crusty exterior we limboists call our sky, hot footing the molten surface, blistering the soles of their feet, unlucky because they have no place to go, nowhere to hide, for they are in full view, the unrelenting glare of the eye. These are the purgatorists. The firmaments remain divided, as they always have been, though they are the only constant in an ever-changing planet. We are neither dead or alive, though we still feel. In fact, our emotions have become sensitized, as if in being reborn, we are unusually reactive to our alien environment. Just as well, we need to keep our wits about us if we are to avoid the eyes' pupils, who roam the wilderness and press their own eyes to the cracks in the ground in their endless endeavours to canvass new recruits. In this they are single-minded, and their persistence is unrivalled. They are prepared to go to any lengths. Indeed, they adopt many forms in order to secure a hit. Mercurial by nature, they go with the flow, and their fluidity allows them access to the most inaccessible territory, so no one is safe. Not even us, the limboists. For if we dare to raise a hair above the surface, or step from the safety of our own shadows, they are ready and waiting. And before you know it, they secrete themselves through the tiniest hole, that microscopic crack, drop onto your skin, and smear their unguent upon you. I have been told, hearsay, mark you, that their secretions are sticky and sickly, heady and deadly. That it blinds, then binds if it gets into your eyes, glues those lashes, lower to upper, irretrievably, burns if it gets up your nose, cauterizes your nostrils and corrodes your lungs, scalds if it gets into your mouth, sucks and suffocates as it goes down, takes your breath away. Literally. So, should it get into your eyes, don't blink. Should it get up your nose, don't inhale. And if it gets into your mouth, don't swallow. These are the precautions as issued by our very own pupil patrol. All very well, but hardly practicable, and as impossible to check as any reflex action would be. Better to heed the advice my jailbird of a father once gave to me, though I swear I never thought I would hear myself repeat those words, let alone condone them. He said, "Hey kid, if you're going to do something you know ain't right, that's cool. Just make sure you don't get caught." Those words make me feel sick. Sick to my stomach, now as then. Except their timing is paramount, is everything. Except the now we find ourselves in today is incomparable to the then in which he said them. Then there were rules, morals, rights and wrongs, boundaries. But most of all, there was free will. Our now, however, is unique in that there are no more behavior models for our society to follow. No laws exist, and there is no need for free will, as we have no decisions to make. Though I have been told today that we do have the option to return, albeit briefly, to our former lives if it is to revisit a trauma and atone for any wrong choice we made or path we took. This is an interesting option. I ponder, for throughout my life I have taken many a wrong turn and a myriad of poor choices. Impossible, surely, to atone for them all. No, my acquaintance confided, you can choose only 3 of these occasions. Just 3. More than this, my acquaintance added, the journeys from our new world back to the earth as we knew it are taken at high cost to ourselves. Our shadows and might threaten our standing here. It is not a decision to be taken lightly. I pressed her for more details, but she became evasive, and was soon a whisper of a shadow in my mind's eye, as she dwindled into the darkness, further than my imagination could see. Let me tell you through my mind's eye, for this is the only mode of communication open to me now in my new world. I will cast my shadow, thought, far as the light in my mind will stretch, so that you have some knowledge of and bearing in this land to which I have been propelled. As I say, it is dark down here beneath the dirt. A labyrinth of tunnels weaving here and there, this way and that, like a meandering river. Maybe it wends its way to a vast ocean, but I doubt it. This place is devoid of moisture of any kind, other than the teardrops that fall from the pupil's eyes. We do not drink or eat. We have no requirements for food or nourishment. We are no longer growing. Effectively, I guess we have died, though not in the conventional sense, and this is our new form. The tunnels have been prepared for us, though by whom and for what purpose other than to drift aimlessly along, or to investigate our environment, I do not yet know. I have asked souls that drift by me, as I have sensed their presence, and they mine, but as yet I have encountered no one who knows or understands how these tunnels came to be. Occasionally I come across hides, burrowed further into the earth, or some are dug into the walls of the tunnels. Small rooms that lead one to another. Again, we do not know for definite the purpose of these areas, but we have assumed that their architect meant them to be resting and or meeting places. In any event, this is what they have become. Strangely, though we need no nourishment, it seems we do need sleep. Our brains have become our sole life-sustaining organs, and as such, they still require sleep in order to refuel and recharge. 2 or 3 times in our day, there is no light so we no longer distinguish between night and day, I become lethargic. My brain feels like it is shriveling, and at these times, I imagine it to look like a walnut, pocketed with puck marks, and I feel in danger, vulnerable, and worry that my shadow and I will dwindle into the infinite nothingness that threatens to overwhelm us all at any given opportunity. That, or the pupil's eyes will peep through one of the cracks in their surface and spy us, observe our fatigue and pour their unguent upon us. It is a risk I don't care to take, so I replenish my shadow frequently. As soon as my weakness begins to lay its calm, cool hand upon me. Often, I find that I have lain alongside another puny shadow, or even inadvertently on top of one. But we are weightless, our corpulence irrelevant now, and it is a mere courtesy, a brief, embarrassed excuse me, and the matter is forgotten. During these all too brief encounters, we make acquaintances and add to our knowledge of this new world, and our new, almost spiritual existence. Some souls have travelled far already, and have more extensive information and data stored in their shadows, which they are happy to share for the greater good. Above our shadow space, and hanging from the ceiling of our tunnels, are roots. They are roots of the vegetation that still grow on the surface where the purgatorists exist. I've been informed by another more knowledgeable limboist and his shadow that conversely, these individuals do need sustenance still. The eye blasts its furnace incessantly, and withers all but the strongest. Similarly, the plants on its molten surface whose roots hang above us. These singed offerings are the purgatorists' food. I believe it must be so, as occasionally I have heard a strange tearing noise above my shadow, and have looked up with my mind's eye curiously, just in time to see a bunch of roots disappear upwards and outwards, and then a pig-like snuffling, as the vegetation, roots and all, are devoured ravenously. Once, I made the mistake of reaching up with my mind's eye, through the gaping crevice that was left after the roots were removed. For one brief moment I witnessed a terrible sight. A wizened soul, almost burnt to a crisp, stuffing the cracked leaves into his cracked mouth and chewing with his black teeth and his dry black tongue. Before he moved away from the crevice through which I stared, and then the unrelenting glare of the eye flashed into my mind and blinded me for several minutes. Initially, I thought I was not going to recover, that the pupils had spotted me and used that moment of blindness to their advantage, and secreted their unguent upon and within me. But this time, this once, I was lucky. Well, I was saved. Another shadow came upon me, and whisked me into a nearby hide. She whispered soothing shadows, like balm to my soul, and soon I felt my senses return to their capacity. I wanted her to stay. It was the first time since arriving here that I had felt such comfort, but she shook her shadow sadly, and vanished in a wisp. I was saddened, but felt rejuvenated at the same time. It had been a warning, but I had learnt from it. The surface was a place to shy from, and curiosity to be avoided. The roots of the vegetation were not to be meddled with, for when torn away, they opened us to perils from the purgatory above, we as yet know far too little about, ditto the eye and its pupils. My shadow shuddered as my memory conjured up the image of the dried purgatorist in all his searing agony before me, and I was glad I was relatively safe, for now, in the coolness of the tunnels. I would bide my time until I knew where my shadow and my mind's eye would next take me, and in the meantime I drew comfort from the thought of that other she-shadow, whispering her song, and for many a long aeon, our day and night, I heard her soft echoes reverberating through the ravages of my soul. I wondered if she was calling me, my siren, for surely I would follow. I don't know how long I have been here now, in my new afterlife, as I have lost all sense of time, there being no physical measurement of days or nights, or the division of these into hours. Existence is interminable, immeasurable. My little boy, with his fascination for all things numerical, used to ask me, many years since, "Daddy, how long is infinity?" How to explain to a four-year-old that it was impossible to say, and why? But now, well, maybe I could try. Oh, it seems we are living in it, infinity. And in thinking of my son, My shadow deepens, for he is one of my dark regrets in life. One that, as the transient shadow I once encountered suggested, could be one of the three moments in my life's path that I might choose to retread, amend, and atone for. My son, my beautiful boy, golden-haired, blue-eyed and dimpled. I lost him long ago, one fateful day. Even now as my shadow dwells on the horror of it all, though I have no physical being, the white-hot pain that reminiscing brings somehow finds me. It pierces my soul punishingly, as it has every day of my life since. I feel like Jesus on the cross with my own bloody, excruciating wounds, screaming stigmata, except in my case, it is deserved. Yes, my soul mourns. Such a beautiful, beautiful boy. And I, his father, daddy, protector. I... The shadows come reluctantly, even now, all these years later and in this dark limbo labyrinth where shadows have a right to be. I killed him.